doing very well. That last year we saw the department reviewing its strategic plan with an aim of focusing more on their core business. And I think we were excited even seeing the alignment that we always talk about of their targets, their objectives to the NPSF, their action plan 2019 towards 2030, the NDP and so forth. And moving from that strategic plan, today we are even going to be hearing what are the plans for 2017-18, how are we going to make sure that when it comes to those core functions of the department and what is expected by the country at large, that of quality education through the delivery of adequate resources, through the good utilization of teachers, delivering of teachers of initial stages, and so many things, the access to ECD, of which is one most important thing that you are looking at, inclusive education, curriculum coverage. Today we are going to be hearing what is the plan, the APP moving forward for this year. So there's so much that we even looked at yesterday. And I believe yesterday's deliberations have assisted us a lot to engage and have input and contribute towards our department achieving its core mandate moving forward. So really today we're not going to have a lot of preambles. We are going to get straight to the annual, to the presentation of our of the APP, so that together with the strategic plan where the department wants us to hear, and surely there are a lot of questions that we have and inputs that we'll be having as a portfolio committee to assist the department moving forward. We are grateful, dear. We are happy that you are with you. Thank you very much for joining us. Did you? Thank you very much. Already even received the information that you are on your way, so I was going to drag and drag, trying to wait, and I'm not going to do that. Now, thank you very much for joining us. I'm just looking at the faces that you have. We don't need any introduction today, except one gentleman. Am I correct, Honorable Member? Yeah, only one. DG, I can just allow you to make one introduction today. Other than that, I know when I do that, because there is only one new face from your delegation, maybe he might not be known, but we are mainly, he will get to know us as we move on with our program. But for us, I think it should be important that you know a new member that you have come with in your delegation, DG.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. My profuse apologies for arriving late.
You know what, when you go to oversight on distributing schools, one thing that you do as the portfolio committee, the first school that we visit, we make sure that we come early so that we can see how's the behavior of the teachers, the management, what time do they arrive at school. And I think that is exactly what we did today. We have observed a lot of to say, UDN, no DG, and
thank you for the observation, Chair. I'm always on time. I arrive an hour earlier, or even 30 minutes minimum. The new face that is part of the delegation is Mr. Ntwana, who's representing Mr. Skuma, the branch head for the administration branch. I should have indicated yesterday also that Mr. Mlambo represents Ms. Joveta, the branch head for provincial and district coordination. The DM is well known to the committee, and the DM will kickstart our input on this engagement.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and colleagues. It's good to be back with you again, and our apologies. In fact, it's not the DA that was, the DG that was late. I had asked him to just consult with me, and the reason for it was really not to repeat what he had raised in his presentation yesterday, so that you are much more efficient in terms of your time management. Chairperson, let me at the outset also apologize for the Minister. The Minister is presently attending a subcommittee of Cabinet, which I too had to attend, in which an item of ours is reflected. So either the Minister or the Deputy Minister was expected to present, and the Minister elected to do that. And given the importance of this committee and the work that we have to do, it was decided that I should come here. Chair, I'm going to be very, very brief in terms of my input, and the brevity would be informed by the nature of the discourse and discussion that you've had yesterday. I do understand that a presentation has been made, and I do understand that, amongst other things, concerns were raised with regard to the RCD program. It's an important. I'm glad that you've raised that, because infrastructure is critical and necessary. And to indicate to you the assurance that the Minister and the Deputy Minister is giving to the Portfolio Committee, that not only are we observing it from a distance, but we really got into the process. So, for example, there were two key factors that contributed to the poor performance in terms of the RCD. Particularly, one was in the Eastern Cape with regard to the rationalization and the mergers that had taken place. And it didn't make sense at the time to merely establish a school simply because you have the resources when it would not be viable. In fact, the observation of this portfolio committee as well as the select committee is that in the rural areas, there is a reality of migration. And if you spend too much money out there, you would basically be creating huge infrastructure with which you'd be underutilized, and you may want to look more closely at allocating better, more resources to urban settings to which learners are migrating. So that's the one reality. What we had done prior to that, however, is that we established a dedicated team, set up guidelines for rationalization and mergers. And these guidelines were, amongst other things, informed by the experience of the Western Cape, when they basically were taken to task in terms of the manner in which they merged. So these procedures were set out, and for the benefit of all the provinces, obviously, and we do think that we benefited from it. However, that had contributed quite directly to delays in the Eastern Cape. The second phenomenon and second key contributor to that was the IDT itself. The IDT is one of the implementing agents, and the DG would share with you that I had at least two meetings with the Deputy Minister of Public Works, where we frankly discussed the matter and decided that we would take away certain work from the IDT simply because of the inability to perform timelessly or efficiently. There are some areas where they are doing well, but other areas, such as in the Free State, where it just didn't make sense to retain them. And by mutual agreement and consent, that transition has taken place. We had all the implementing agents kept together. We told them to even come with their lawyers, and quite seriously, we've been really, really hard at work in relation to accelerating the progress. I could say with reasonable confidence, you know, and I generally, we generally comply with our undertaking. So when we said we would be able to, on average, deliver a school per week, we did indeed, in fact, do so. There has been a lull because of these factors here, but I am reasonably confident that we would be able to exceed the target in this financial year because of the systems that we have put in place, not only for schools, but also for water and sanitation. But I thought it's important for us to say upfront, this was a challenge in the financial year, and these are the positive steps that we have taken in order to address the challenge. And not only are we going to be monitoring, we would certainly get involved in the particular process with the DG and the senior management in this regard. And there is an ongoing interaction with the Deputy Minister of Public Works in relation to these particular realities. So that was the one area I thought I would raise. The second area, and I don't want to talk about achievements at length, I'd rather talk about challenges first. would be the concern that may have been raised quite legitimately and certainly informed by the findings of the Auditor General in relation to the Karikure program itself. I understand that the DG has indeed provided an explanation. He's indicated the steps that have been taken by the department in relation to appointing an independent company to do the forensics, and his findings were in fact shared with yourself. This program is coming to an end, and in fact our focus would be really on the second chance now, which we certainly believe we must expand and do much more efficiently, because that creates huge opportunities for our learners. So, in general, I thought that the department, and I say it, and it's not really to say that we've done extremely well, but I think we've done reasonably well in terms of the targets that we've set out and in terms of our performance. What is it that the Deputy Minister would want to raise with this portfolio committee as central issues? And I'm not even going to speak to the presentation. In my opinion, there are three important areas that we should pay particular attention to in the last 2 years of this administration. The one is to certainly improve, enhance, and expand on our ICT. Now, obviously, again, it must be understood that it's a kind of shared responsibility. We're not responsible for connectivity. We look at the Ministry of Posts and telecommunications to assist us in terms of that particular infrastructure, but we did not wait for that to happen before we did certain things. An interesting development has occurred as a result of an intervention which we made not now, not 2 years ago, but many, many years ago. So we all celebrate the quality and the content of our Siyabula books for mathematics and science, grades 10, 11, and 12. We had Cecil Nzalo, the foundation, joining us and provided us with approximately 94 textbooks. And I would want members of this committee to look at the content of those textbooks in mathematics, on science, human sciences, and technology. They are excellent. I went personally through those textbooks, and I said, wow. And the reality is, it's becoming very, very clear now, Chairperson, that it is well within our grasp to have digitized content for every subject, for every grade, as a core textbook. We would then require, and I think we will get it, because our math, science, and technology, grades 4, 5, and 6, is being utilized by all provinces. Mathematics and science is utilized by all provinces for grades 10, 11, and 12. And the content of what we have out here, which is digitized, and which is available, and is preloaded in the tablets that are being provided to learners, would take us a long way in ensuring that each child would have a textbook which he or she could use, download on a tablet, on an iPad, or even on a mobile phone. And that's an important reality. And given the fact that we've already had an agreement with Vodacom that when our cloud, our infinite archive of data is completed, it would sit on their platform. And if anybody accesses it, it would be zero rated. It means that we would be doing something quite extraordinary. So I would want to say that we would have to continue in that particular vein with greater urgency to ensure that the reality of ICT in all our schools is one that we can achieve within the next 2 years. And that is a hope, that is a desire, that is a plan. And we pay particular attention to our rural areas. So we look at KwaZulu-Natal, the Eastern Cape, Limpopo, where it's much needed so that we are able to bridge the digital divide. So that's the first point. The second point is an important one, and it's often forgotten, but always has been raised by this esteemed committee, is that unless you have professional educators who are able to facilitate learning, you're not going to be able to change the outcomes and the quality of education. And to that extent, I do believe, without boasting, that we've done reasonably well. We've established 143 teacher resource centers countrywide, which means that every district within the country has a teacher resource center. And these teacher resource centers have all the data that is necessary for us to be able to conduct continuous professional development there. There's already engagement with the South African Council of Educators in terms of the accreditation of programs that will be provided at these teacher resource centers. All the teacher resource center managers have been trained. The ICT is extraordinary, and the Deputy Minister in the Presidency and I have had the benefit of visiting four provinces now, where we visited schools, so that's ICT, and the teacher resource centers, which are hubs. And we were quite impressed with the quality of the coordination and the management of those particular institutions. But I think the secret for the future lies in the utilization of these teacher resource centers by all educators, irrespective of their union affiliation, because it's a resource that is available to each one of them, and I do believe it would create this kind of convergence where educators could get together and say, well, you know, let's work professionally together and collaboratively in order to enhance our ability. Now, what the DG has directed and certainly supported fully by the Minister and the Deputy is the fact that we have developed applications for self-assessment which are non-intrusive. So your mathematics teacher, your English teacher, your science teacher can go down to the teacher resource center, assess his or her ability, be able to find out what are the deficits and improve on that. We want that to become so widespread and universal that by the end of this year, all teachers have assessed themselves in a non-intrusive way. The instrument is there for really to say, can I check what my ability is? Am I lagging behind? And where are the deficits? And what do I do to improve it? And I'm confident that that would certainly change the mindset and the approach to education. So that is linked to your professional development, and there are many other areas which I don't want to expand on. The third reality that I think we should, and I would want to say that what the department has done, it's not been arrogant about the challenges. What it did, it's weighed difficulties with mathematics and science, decided to have a roundtable conference, caught all the stakeholders, listened to them attentively, take the advice, and move forward. It did so also with rural education. Now, the migration itself is a phenomenon that we have to recognize. And that the effects of that is simply, it's not only the learners are migrating, the educators are migrating with the learners. To be able to retain quality educators, particularly in the areas of mathematics, science, and languages, is a huge challenge. And then we've established in the department a dedicated branch to look at rural education. Because if we don't do so, you're going to find quality in your urban setting, and you're going to find a lack of ability or a lack of quality in the rural setting, not because the learners are not capable or don't have the competencies, but simply because we don't have the skilled educators to do so. And therefore, the dedicated branch has been established, and I do believe it's something that we cannot ignore if we want to improve the quality of education. My last point, and this point links up with the manner in which this portfolio committee has conducted its work. It was about education. It was not about politics. And it's always been about education. I think we're on the threshold of basically doing certain things differently, supported by all political parties, interestingly. So, for example, the issue of performance of principals and deputy principals is an important area. Now, we have draft legislation. In the draft legislation, we deal with the issues of competencies. It's not only about your qualification and your experience. It's also about your competency as a principal. It's a requirement. We would urge and invite and say, please support us in that, because you all recognize that the professional management and leadership of an institution largely determines the functionality and the outcome of the performance in that particular institution. So when the legislation comes, we would want to say, please raise robustly without any concerns, but help us in making this a reality sooner rather than later, so that we don't have to wait for processes in the ELRC to be completed. The legislation will override everything else, and we can make that a reality. That's in terms of performance, that's in terms of competencies, and in terms of how we appoint our principals. I just leave that with you to say that we are on the cusp of basically introducing the legislation to Parliament, and when it does come through, please engage with us as robustly as you always do, but help us also to achieve the particular outcomes that we think would improve on the quality of education. So these are my opening remarks, Chairperson, but again, as always, to thank the entire portfolio committee for really doing wonderfully well in terms of support that you have provided. And you, Chair, have been a wonderful leader. Very on the ball. You really put pressure on us, but you do so not because you want to make our lives difficult, but simply because you want to ensure that there's efficient delivery in basic education. So thank you to each and every one of you. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much to him for his opening remarks. I know usually we don't question the remarks. I'm not questioning now, but DM, for the benefit of this committee and also preempting the question that I know very well that it will come from all of us this side, before we give it to DG. Others, yes, DM, I'll be very imperial. I know we'll have to engage and interact as we have received this. But DM, from your opening remarks that you have just made, for the benefit of us and the committee, can you give us a picture of what is an ideal teacher center? What is it that you wish to see? Because as the portfolio committee, we've gone through the provinces, we've never found joy whenever we have to visit any teacher center. We are from Gauteng recently. There's so much I know members will be sharing when it comes to that, but really, if you can give us, as to say, as the department, as DBE, this is what the teacher center is, and this is how educators, this is how you wish to see educators being developed and assisted from those centers. And maybe to go even further, because as a portfolio committee, we'll make sure that we visit the teacher center where you can say, boldly say, yes, we are seated here with your DG and your delegation. If you can go to a certain province, this is the teacher center that you say is the perfect one. We'll really love to go there, and I promise that we'll make sure that by all means we go to the teacher center and see the teacher center operating the way that you have explained and the way that we have expectation of a teacher center operating. Okay, before you do that, on that point, okay, Honorable Day.
Thank you, Chair. I do have some follow-ups left over from yesterday to the DG. I'm not sure when is the best time to ask those.
Yeah, I would open that one twice for the DG. This one, I was just focusing on this opening remarks, then we'll begin the meeting.
Okay, then I just have one question on okay. Deputy Minister's opening remarks. Thank you very much. We are particularly interested in the legislation that you mentioned, the draft legislation. And of course we agree in principle, if you excuse the pun, on the need for performance contracts and competency testing for principals and to ensure that the best people are appointed to lead our schools. So we're looking forward to seeing that legislation and to engaging with you on that. And it seems to be long overdue. And I know that your efforts have been frustrated by the unions for the last couple of years, and we saw that yesterday in the presentation, that even some of the indicators were left out of the APP because these negotiations are still ongoing. So we hope that this will bring this to the surface and we can tackle this issue very much head-on. Can I just ask you what the name of the legislation is? Is it the Basic Education Laws Amendment Bill? Okay, thank you. And what are the timeframes? When do you expect to introduce the legislation? When will it be gazetted? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and also thank you to Deputy Minister. I just want to, there's a question that I asked yesterday, specifically to the DG, and you couldn't answer me. And you sort of like omitted that, which is a big issue that we are facing in Vuani at the moment, whereby there are learners who are not attending school. My question to the DG yesterday was that given the fact that the ANC have gone ahead and had an agreement that they've made with the AIC regarding the issue of Matatiel, why is it the issue of Vuani is not being resolved? Is it because it's not a political issue and this particular one of Matatiel is a political issue? And why are we ignoring this issue of Vuani and allowing to continue? Because as I said, the young students or people are not going to schools. Why is this issue not being resolved? And also, there's a report that just came out from the Equal Education Report, which states that in the Eastern Cape, they've done a sample of about 60 schools. Out of 14 of those schools, they still have inappropriate structures. I know you've highlighted that. But out of the 14 of those that they visited, 41% of those, they are not actually even in the list of the Department of Education. So I just want to find out, so that shows that the information that we have been given by the department regarding the schools that are maybe even the database that we have is not accurate. So I just want to find out, why is it that the database that we are receiving from the Department of Education is not accurate, or it's just purely because there's no interest in giving us the right information. So I just would like you to clarify that for me. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. And Chair, I think you're absolutely right in entitled to ask the legitimate question as to what is an ideal teacher center. When we started off with this initiative of teacher resource centers, the intention was basically to have at least one per district, so that it would be accessible and it would be available. And the plan was really to look at it at about 40 countrywide. It became very popular, quite organically grew into the more than 140 that we have today. Not all of them have connectivity. So I would say, firstly, in terms of the teacher resource center, it must be accessible to schools within a district. So it can't be so far removed from the learning environment. So classes of school must have access to the teacher resource center. It's important. And it must have the appropriate infrastructure for conferences to take place there, for ICT activity to take place there, so that not only educators and learners, but also people from the community could utilize this particular resource for the development. So it's actually a community youth-based initiative, if I could say so. And I've seen it with my own eyes in two of the provinces. One is in Northern Cape, and the other one is in Gauteng, where youth who are out of school were utilizing the resource center to enhance their competencies and skills, and utilizing the ICT in particular for that purpose. So that would be the first requirement, is that the infrastructure must be appropriate, secondly, it must be accessible and located ideally, and thirdly, it must have sophisticated connectivity. Not connectivity with 3G, it must have broadband connectivity, so basically the data can be made available. The next requirement would be to ensure that it has the necessary database where any educator or any learner is able to download all the information that is required, whether it's past papers, whether it's links to particular subjects, whether it's audio-video material, because we have that data available. But more importantly, in terms of its governance, your manager of the teacher resource must be capable, must understand the demands of education, must be able to network with educators, and must be able to monitor what is happening. Where you have a skilled person who can basically pass on skills and competencies to educators, who is able to coordinate and manage, those centers work well. And indeed, you probably have gone to centers where the managers of those particular institutions, even though they are trained, don't have a clue of what is expected. And we have conveyed this to the department, the DG is aware of it, and management in the department is aware of it, because our view simply is that train, retrain, and retrain, because you need a vibrant person to be able to drive that. I also think that there has to be strict monitoring and evaluation. We know where the weaknesses are. We know where the weaknesses are, and we know what the intervention should take place. And if we have a teacher resource center, which we could say, countrywide, this is what we're going to do at this particular time. So whether it's in terms of the introduction of indigenous African languages, whether it's in terms of improving the ability of educators in terms of fractions, or whether it's in terms of English across the curriculum, because language is such a barrier. I'm just giving you broad examples. There are generic elements that can be taught throughout the system. I think the system is growing because it's new. It hasn't been tried before. It's unlike our schools that have been there for more than a century or a few centuries. These are new institutions that are growing, and as they are growing, with the use of ICT as an enabler, I think we'd be able to achieve those outcomes sooner rather than later. I'm more than happy to provide this committee with the institutions that I feel are appropriate. One, I can tell you without a shadow of doubt that if you go to the hubs of all the 9 provinces, these function efficiently. But beyond that, there are centers that I would want you to look at. So we would provide you with a list of centers across the provinces. So depending on which province you are visiting, you might want to just go there. And you don't even have to give them notice. I would want you to go there unannounced, so that you could basically see what it is. Because what we did is on 2 occasions, we went announced, and on 2 occasions, we went unannounced. And that helped a lot because it gives you a good sense of their preparedness in terms of that. With regard to Mr. Davis's, thank you very much for inquiring about the legislation. It is indeed the Education Basic Laws Amendment, the Bella Bill itself, that is there. We've advertised it for public comments already. It's now for cabinet approval, and that should be, I would imagine, for cabinet approval would be within the next month or at the most 2 months. We also had a very difficult time out here, but I could say reasonably confidently, we are now in May. I think by the end of June we should basically get cabinet approval on the bill itself. So, but I'll try to even accelerate to even make sure that it gets there sooner rather than later. I think we can't wait for parties or unions or to come to consensus where it is not there. This is the need. We have to address it, and we have to address it through legislation. So be it. I just think that's the way to go, because we've been more than patient and more than accommodating in terms of the processes that have been that have been set up in order to deal with these issues. The next issue is with regard to Ruvani. Very difficult, but thank you for raising it. I think we can't duck it. We have to confront it. What we can share with you that there is indeed an interministerial committee that is looking at the matter. We have drawn the attention of the interministerial committee to the consequences of not resolving the matter sooner rather than later. Because part of the consequences, and it's unfortunate, that our children are being used as pawns. They are being kept away from our schools. Our schools are being destroyed. But the thing out here is we have to find a solution. And the solution would be basically to say, we recognize that the demarcation issue is a problem. How do you resolve the problem? And we have made an appeal to the committee itself, the cabinet committee itself, to say, please find a way to deal with this matter urgently. And as they're doing so, we're trying our best to basically persuade the authorities to ensure that they don't keep the children away from schools, but rather go to schools, to take the communities, to take the responsibility of protecting those schools. Because, I mean, that is an issue, has to be resolved politically or otherwise, and must be resolved sooner rather than later. And if we don't do so, we're certainly going to have the consequences that we are faced with as a department of having to deal with disruptions and suspension of teaching and learning in our schools. And that is not good for any community, including the Ruvani community. And I can tell you, and I can tell you firsthand, that even though there were discussions at a particular level, We have not stopped having conversations with the traditional authorities and leaders of communities to ensure that we get some kind of commitment from them to get our children back into school. They are our children, and they have to be back in school. So your concern is as great as mine. I feel the same way, and I do believe that government, and I say the ANC-led government, has a particular responsibility of ensuring that they resolve the issues of Ubani sooner rather than later. So there's no disagreement between us. I'm saying I've listened to you, and in fact, I share your sentiment in terms of this particular aspect. The other element was with regard to inappropriate structures. Now, with regard to the ASIDI, you have a database. If we say to you in the ASIDI database that the school has been built, I can assure you, you can go to the school and you will find that school has been built. You would not find any data in terms of the ASIDI program which distorts the realities or which is incorrect, unless it's an inadvertent error. We tell them to check and double check, because that is data that we put into the public space and we expect it to be verified and correct. With regard to the provincial data, we rely on data that is provided by the provinces. And that data then is captured and sits at times on our database as it comes from the province. I can't vouch with absolute certainty that every one of those there. We try as far as possible to get verification of it. And if you draw our attention, if you tell us this is what Equal Education has found, then this is what we do. So, for example, we've worked extremely hard in the Eastern Cape, and you know what a difficult terrain the Eastern Cape is in terms of furniture. But I can tell you with certainty now that we can give you data about furniture requirements in each and every school. Not because we sat back and waited for the province, because we had a dedicated team to do that. Now, with regard to infrastructure, we set up a team, DG, I don't know if you shared that with them, to say that we don't want an overlap where the province basically plans and ASIDI plans, and there's no convergence in terms of our plan. So in terms of planning, the instruction has been given that you have to have a joint work task team to look at ASIDI programs, particularly the Eastern Cape, which is the principal beneficiary. You know, the principal beneficiary of our city schools is the Eastern Cape, followed by the Western Cape, in terms of numbers. And the Western Cape has had its problems in the past, but they've done remarkably well in terms of the management of that particular process. And we certainly would want the Eastern Cape to emulate and follow suit. So we will basically be doing that. And I can give you an assurance that that is one of the requirements that we will oversee. That the infrastructure, firstly, and you brought it to my attention, I would want to have a commitment from the MEC to say that the data that has been provided is indeed correct. And if it's not correct, must be corrected immediately. I'm unaware of the inaccuracy of the data that you're referring to, but if you can draw my attention to, or if you can provide me with the information, I will follow up on it. But I think more importantly is for us to push very, very hard at infrastructure with the ASIDI resources as well as the provincial resources, so that our children get the appropriate infrastructure sooner rather than later. I can say quite confidently that not less than 50 schools will be completed by the end of the financial year. So that's how I see what is happening in the Eastern Cape, which means that in the Eastern Cape alone, you'd be having approximately a school per week on average in this financial year. And we have to do that because we have to catch up where there has been a lull. We have to do that, and we'll have to work extremely hard at it. So I hope, Chairperson, that has helped, and it's these issues that basically tell us, listen, wake up, look at these matters more urgently. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DM. I know we're still going to have questions along these lines after the presentation, but honourable members, yesterday we ended up leaving out the questions that were supposed to be tackled yesterday because of time. I would love us to go there. Thank you. Let's go to those members who had questions yesterday, which we deferred to to this morning. I can remember Honorable Davis was one of them.
Just with your permission, this one thing that I forgot
yes.
to mention, and then I slipped my mind completely. With regard to the Bella Bill itself, it doesn't deal with performance contracts. It deals with the competencies of educators and the manner, principals and the manner in which they are going to be appointed. However, in terms of the law, as we speak right now, if unions have agreed as they have, and they have not signed an agreement, all we've got to do basically is to say we are now enforcing the provisions of the agreement, whether you like it or not. So that power lies, resides with us. But we would like to do so simultaneously with the legislation so that there is a correlation between your competency and your performance at the same time. Thank you very much.
CM? Honorable Day. Yes, Honorable Machaika, before Honorable Day.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry, couldn't make it yesterday because of the flight. I just like to ask something. From DM, what is the meaning of walk-in teachers? Because I went to a school where I was told there are teachers and then walk-in teachers. I just want to ask a question so that when they
we were just questioning him on his opening remarks. Can we reserve that question for today's presentation? DG, I think. Honorable Majeke for today's business already have a question. Honorable Davis.
Thank you, Chair. So yesterday we were talking about the Karigude program at some length, and I asked about criminal charges. And the department said that criminal charges haven't been laid because the priority was to recover the money and to set up systems to prevent such fraud reoccurring in the future. And I accept that. And the department also said that nothing prevents them from lodging criminal charges. So that's good. So the door is open for real consequences for those who commit fraud. And I think it's important to just reinforce this point, because if you want to send out a signal that it's not acceptable and you want to prevent reoccurrences, surely the best way to do that would be to institute criminal action against those who are found guilty. And that will send out the clearest signal and to others who might be tempted in the future to commit similar acts of fraud. So I think that that's a very important part you need consequence management to be able to prevent this from recurring. That's the first point I want to make on that. The second point is, are you not obliged, in terms of the Prevention and Combating of Corrupt Activities Act, to report fraud and corruption to the police? So it's not enough to simply say, well, we've dealt with it in-house and we've recovered the money. I think legally you are obliged to report this to the police so that there can be a proper criminal investigation. And if you don't, then I believe the accounting officer, which is you, DG, would actually be liable. Would actually be guilty of an offence yourself, because you are duty-bound as the accounting officer to report such fraud and corruption to the police. The second point relates to underperforming schools, and I accept that a lot of engagements have taken place with these schools. I have received replies from the minister, which details fairly briefly some of the interventions that have happened. And this includes the extra classes and the study guides and all of the things that you mentioned yesterday. But these interventions are clearly not working. If there's 38 schools that have underperformed every single year for the last 5 years, they've all got below 40%, and some quite a lot below 40% every single year for the last 5 years, it means that the interventions are not working. And in terms of the SA Schools Act, it is the... one of the options available to the DG is to consider taking action against educators who demonstrate incapacity or poor work performance. When I asked the minister this in her question, in a parliamentary question, she didn't really give me a straight answer, so I'd like a straight answer now. Has any action ever been taken against an educator, and particularly a principal, at any of these schools for poor performance? Because if the same principal has been in charge of these schools for the last 5 years, and you're getting the same results every year, then it's quite clear that there's a problem of school leadership. So, DG, have you used your powers to take action against any educators at any of these 38 schools that have performed poorly over the last 5 years? My last question relates to the internships, and it's an interesting dilemma that you find yourselves in. On one hand, you want to give people opportunities, but on the other hand, you can't have them in the department for too long. And as you say, on humanitarian grounds, you have allowed some interns to overstay their welcome. I'd like to say that the problem with that logic is that you are preventing another potential intern from getting an internship at the department. So while you might be being humanitarian towards that one individual who stays for 3 or 4 or 5 years in the department, you're actually preventing some other intern from getting that opportunity. So I think that that logic is flawed, quite frankly. What are you doing, and this is a question, what are you doing to help interns to, in terms of career pathing and preparing them for employment in the department? Because it seems to be a waste for me for there to be interns in your department who aren't earmarked for greater things in the department, because then you will get a return on your investment. So I don't think it seems good enough that interns come into the department and they spend 1 year or 2 years and then they're just let go. What is being done to empower them to take on full-time jobs in the department and to grow in the department and to contribute to the education sector? Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. This was a question that I asked yesterday. I asked the DG, but I don't recall him responding to it. But now that the Deputy Minister is saying that, you know, you're going to be delivering a school per week in the Eastern Cape, so I just want to find out how are you going to be able to tackle these issues that have been mentioned yesterday, which is regarding the underperformance of ACD indicators. One of the obstacles actually a couple of them, was based on the poor contractor performance, which results into a termination of contracts and procurement of replacement contractors. And the poor performance by the professional service providers, the poor performance by the implementation agents, and so forth. I just want to find out what, how are you going to be able to tackle those issues? Because I wouldn't like, I mean, you're saying that you're going to deliver the schools, but I just want to know how are you going to tackle these issues? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Mine was just to add or stop up what I asked to ask that question on inclusive education in rural areas. I wanted to ask Astron what plans the department has to there are provinces that have no schools or areas or districts that have no inclusive education. And the rural children who have those different disabilities, they don't benefit because maybe the one that is 400 away from the region is always fully empty. Children don't get chance from other places to get chance. What plans do you have in order to accommodate such learners, especially on districts, in districts where there are totally no inclusive or special education schools? Because it's our proposal in my constituency was, why not build one school that will accommodate all the learners?
There's no mic here, Chairperson. Good morning, Chairperson and colleagues. Chairperson, I had already submitted the apology earlier. And then I just wanted to raise an issue. It's a question that I raised yesterday that was not responded to, Chairperson, with regard to the plans by the department, with regard to safeguarding the infrastructure for the department, and whether they are insured at the moment, because it's very clear that we are losing a lot of money. And then also just to check what is the financial impact that we have already experienced, Deputy Minister, with regard to the banning, and even going forward, how are we planning to make sure that we don't take from those who are waiting and give to those who have already wasted. Thank you, Chairperson.
Committing errors of either, pronouncing surnames wrong. I'm just going to go to the questions directly. Okay, Chair. Well, it's a pity, or maybe let me delay responding to some of the questions raised by Honorable Davis. Well, indeed, the question that I think I missed to respond to yesterday had to do with in terms of a city, the observation was that the poor performance is it not related to tenders being accorded to contractors who do not have the requisite capacity, and therefore the allocation of tenders might be flawed in a way, and then attributable to some of the problems that we have. At the moment, Honorable Chairperson, tenders are actually advertised and allocated by implementing agents. The role of the department is to monitor whether the due process has been followed. And from the paper trail that we've been following, there is no indication that seems to suggest that some of the challenges are attributable to the observation made by the Honorable Member. But safe to say that some companies and people they are excelling in presenting an outstanding story of being able to move mountains, to walk on water. But when the actual happening is to take place, and that is based on my own experience, papers do not always give you a full picture of the capacity of the service provider. And we do pick up problems. From companies, if you look at the papers presented in terms of their capacity, I'm sure that they could be afforded an opportunity almost everywhere. But when it comes to the actual execution of the project, then the real things begin to emerge. And that's part of that problem. We have strengthened our memorandum of agreement with implementing agents with a view of increasing our ability to impose penalties on implementing agents, because our view is that we can't face the music alone. We should also have an avenue to terminate services with implementing agents. Part of the interventions that we have put in place, as the Deputy Minister accurately reflected, it took the Deputy Minister to engage with the Deputy Minister of Public Works to raise our concerns. For instance, as I said yesterday, IDT is not linked to our core business. But at the end of the day, we end up babysitting this entity because it's got to do work for us. And strictly speaking, it's taking our time that we could be using to focus on improving, you know, the quality of education. So the intervention measures that we have in place is to have regular meetings with them in the year under review. Towards the end of the financial year, I had weekly meetings with them where they would present their plans, indicate progress, report on challenges, unblock blockages, and that's how we have managed to improve. And the Deputy Minister was saying to me this morning, I hope that these measures we are going to continue with to make sure that there's no relapse, because this year we must exceed our targets. And that directive is going to be carried out. The meetings that we've been having with them will indeed continue. So in short, Honourable Member, I'm saying from what we have evaluated, from what we have seen, that doesn't seem to suggest that tenders were afforded to people whose papers could not demonstrate that they have the requisite capacity. And then, Honourable Mokoto, again, my profuse apologies in the height of rushing and making sure that we don't keep you here for longer than what is expected. I missed some of the questions, and the same applies to others that I couldn't respond to. Government does not insure property, given the fact that it's not cost-effective. But the trend in Vuani seems to be indicating something worth paying attention to. Because effectively, it might mean that we replace property, and after doing so, then it's going to be destructed or destroyed, which might require that we take up a discussion with Treasury. But government does not insure property, including vehicles, because it's not cost effective. It has been scientifically proven not to be cost effective. Because you'll end up just paying for what does not bring value for money. And that government in general, not only national government, government in general, does not insure assets such as your fixed assets and assets such as your vehicles and so on. They are not insured by government because it's not cost effective, it's not economical. Against principles of the PFMA. And then Honorable Davis, because Honorable Davis is back. I do agree with your observations that it should be incumbent upon us to lay criminal charges where criminal activities have been engaged. And where there is fraud, we are obliged in terms of POCA to report this to relevant authorities and that action is taken. Chair, you'd recall that when we appeared before SCOPA, an undertaking was made by Hawks that they were going to work with us. We had hoped that this exercise would be carried out by Hawks. But unfortunately, a few weeks after we came back from SCOPA, Ben Hawk said, no, in their reflection, they are of the view that this matter doesn't sit with them, but rather asset and forfeiture unit. I had some engagement with asset and forfeiture unit, but there hasn't been much. But I can make this undertaking that with the new head of Hawks, I will secure an appointment as soon as possible and request them to prioritize these cases where fraud has been taking place and report back to the committee at the appropriate time. Underperforming schools, interventions, Honorable Davis, with respect, your observation might be correct in part, but not in all respects. The problem is that underperforming schools, almost like your CISO, this year you'd have others going out of the underperforming zone and get new ones joining. So it's really not entirely correct to say that there is no improvement at all. There are serial underperformers. But as I said yesterday, some of the reasons for underperformance are in the design. I've given an example of a small, unviable school. Until you merge that school, you can be assured of underperformance year in and year out, because quality education will never take place in such schools. The only remedy is merger and closure. I've given examples of what happened in the Northwest. I've given the example of what, in fact, Free State was leading. Northwest learned from the Free State, and Northwest followed, and Mpumalanga is now running. They've got big farm schools that they've put up, which are really providing quality education. But as I committed yesterday, it might be worth a while to give you details blow by blow per school per case, and then we take it from there. Instead of just looking at the number 38 and 40, because 38 and 40 from year to year, there might be new schools joining, old schools going out. It's better to deal with case by case, and then we take it from there. That's my respectful submission on that one. Internships, before that, the issue of capacity, Honorable Davis, with respect again, the relevant empowering legislation is not SASA in this regard. SASA, I think, is Section 16.2 in respect of the responsibility of the governing body and the management. But in respect of incapacity of educators is the Employment of Educators Act. And the employer in this regard is not the DG sitting in Pretoria. The employer in all PEDs is superintendent generals referred to in the relevant legislation as HODs, heads of departments, who are empowered by that legislation to deal with incapacity as it relates to underperformance and incapacity of any kind. The DG in Pretoria doesn't have the legislative capacity. I'm not competent to deal with employees in provinces, but I'm competent to deal with employees at DVE. So that's my response to that. Internships, Honorable Davis, you're absolutely right that perhaps at the time humanitarianism overtook to some extent the logic and the rationale that you've just demonstrated to me, because I could see what was before me, and I acted based on that. I accept that weakness. And as I said yesterday, we have decided to keep to the law, to the rule. But I do accept that not only myself, but even my predecessors acted in the same way to extend the contract of interns, given the fact that you pushing these people to this bleak future that you all see was humanly almost impossible. But now we just have to stick to the policy and say 12 months, beyond 12 months, you are outside in the street, we're taking those that are new. You can be assured that that will definitely be carried out. I've indicated how are we tackling issues of poor performance that relate to infrastructure. And Chair, as I said, we now have these interventions of meeting regularly, plans being presented, evaluating. At least I've said I cannot have weekly meetings. At least I now have to reduce those meetings to monthly, because I have to come to the portfolio committee. I've got to carry out other responsibilities and so on. So weekly meetings won't work, but monthly meetings, but meetings do continue. And we'll be evaluating, following up on plans, making sure that we avoid what we picked up. Honorable Basson, inclusive education. In the last presentation that we made to the Council of Education Ministers, which included inclusive education, we applauded Gauteng for having put up, I think if I'm not mistaken, about 5 to 6 schools of learners with special education needs. And we have encouraged the other 8 provinces, Deputy Minister, that they must follow the example of Gauteng so that we particularly deal with what was projected to be about 500,000 learners of special education needs who are not in an education institution, who need to be accommodated in an education institution. Mpumalanga has moved in building such schools. We are monitoring and following on the other 7 provinces to make sure that the infrastructure that we put up also addresses the needs of learners with special education needs. But I must humbly submit again that it might not be feasible to have a school for each district. It might also not be cost effective to do that, given we need to identify the need and provide in terms of the need. But I do take the advice that is saying consider building as many as possible to make the service more available. I think that's what the observation is saying to us. And Chair will just make sure that we follow up on other provinces and monitor to make sure that this need it's also responded to by the other provinces. I don't know, maybe Deputy Minister would want to comment.
I think the DG has done extremely well, but just in relation to interns, I think the point that Mr. Davis made is that not only must you provide opportunities for them, but to provide them with the appropriate skills and training so that they could be permanently appointed. In my staff component, for example, I have 2 interns who are permanent, and it takes a small measure of effort to ensure that they develop and acquire certain skills, mentorship and coaching within the department, and the difference is there. And I'm extremely delighted with their ability. So I endorse from my life experience your recommendation that particular skills have to be, you've got to nature those that are there for induction. I just thought I'd deal with the issue that you had raised, which is a very, very important issue. There are so many factors that contribute towards non-performance. The Eastern Cape in itself cannot be compared to Gauteng or many of the other provinces, just in terms of its lay. You know, you have hills and valleys, you have places that are very, very inaccessible. You are able to build a school out here only to realize after you start building that there's no water connection, nor is there electrical supply over there. And all these contribute to delays. And many contractors have in the past basically been tendering on the basis of plans without going to look at the geological conditions that apply in those particular areas. And big contractors with a credible record have failed dismally in performing in the Eastern Cape, whereas the smaller and medium-sized contractors have performed better. Quite interesting. But those are the realities. So it's a range of factors that contribute towards this. But what we've done is in terms of our interventions, and it has helped in the past, is we said that you can't have one contract with a contractor for 6 schools. You'd rather have 6 individual contracts so that the moment there is non-performance in any one of those sites, you can determine the contract immediately rather than basically being in a situation where you're trapped with 6 schools where there's performance in some and non-performance in the others. We've engaged with the legal department. The second factor that we've engaged in, and we've done that, getting Treasury involved with us to say that with this infrastructure, the ACD, when the Deputy Minister sits with either the Deputy Minister of Public Works, we invite Treasury, Deputy Minister of Treasury, to come and sit with us. We tell those contractors, come with your lawyers. Fortunately, we've been trained lawyers, so we do know how to manage it. And the fact that you basically get involved, so we don't get involved in the processes of tendering, But once the task has been completed and work has been started, we then make it a point to engage with them. The moment there is a lapse, we make the intervention. We're going to resuscitate, and I've told the DG that. You know, I used to meet every week with the infrastructure teams within the department to get a report, and I don't want a narrative. I want a visual manifestation of the work in progress to say, this is what it looked like last week. Here are the photographs. This is what it looks like this week. So I can visually see how the progress is. And that has made a remarkable difference. Given what has occurred in terms of these lapses, and given our intention to exceed the targets, this is something that we're going to resuscitate. And indeed, we have already resuscitated. We've already had three meetings just before the Easter break. So we will continue in that particular vein and look at all the matters. Maybe what would be useful is that in our quarterly report, we provide a dedicated report in terms of progress in the RCD, so that as members of the portfolio committee, you too have an insight of what is happening and what the progress is. So we would be able to say the percentage of progress in every school which falls under the ECD project is then provided to you. We thought that would be very useful. I think the last one, and I know the DG basically found it an extremely difficult one to deal with, is the issue of Bhuvani. How do you manage it in a way that you don't take all the resources for infrastructure from other schools and plow it into Bhuvani? You have a responsibility to learners across the province out there, and you've got to maintain the balance. What we have done in our engagement with the provincial department, both the minister and the deputy minister were there, so was the DG there, to say to them that, please, we don't want to have a situation where all the resources that you've made available for infrastructure are now diverted to Bhuvani at the expense of racial needs or similar needs in other schools. So a balance has been maintained, and in fact, that particular balance is being overseen in a way that we don't have a distortion of delivery in the province. So thank you for raising it. But it does create an anomaly. In a sense, you have an immediate need on the one hand where infrastructure has been completely destroyed, and then you have a reasonably urgent need in surrounding areas. But the allocation of that has been done in terms of the budget itself has spoken to the concern that has been raised. Address the immediate need, but do not forget to look at the other needs in the province. Thank you very much, Chair.
Sorry, just to indicate that the observation made by the Deputy Minister of absorbing interns, we can provide a database of how many interns we have absorbed on fixed-term contract, on permanent basis as well. We've got that. We've got a number of interns who got trained and eventually got a job. We can even give you information on those that got employed out in other departments, even from the department. Thank you.
And on top of that, even in the provinces, I think basic education is doing very well. There are a lot of them. I think that can even assist just to see how much, how huge the scale is when it comes to that. Honourable members and colleagues from the DBE, there is fresh tea outside. We are just about to begin with today's presentation. I just suggest and request that for 3 minutes you just stretch, we get tea so that we avoid this movement that you are seeing. I know we need this tea. Just 5 minutes we get the cup, our cups of tea, and we sit down so that we can then begin with the next presentation, please. So, yeah, it's 2:15. By 10 to 11, can we start with?